It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Four UN peacekeepers killed in Mali, at least five Congolese soldiers killed in cross-border fighting with Rwanda. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. A suicide attack at a UN camp in northern Mali killed four UN peacekeepers and raised concerns about heightened instability as the government tries to recover from a 2012 Islamist militant takeover in the north. UN officials say a vehicle exploded near the entrance to the camp in the northern desert town of Ugwalok Wednesday, killing four Chadian peacekeepers. Six other UN peacekeepers were wounded, along with four Malian soldiers. The Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda have blamed each other for a cross-border clash Wednesday that left at least five Congolese soldiers dead. The DRC accuses Kigali of crossing into North Kivu province, kidnapping and killing a soldier. Four more were killed by Rwandan forces who charge it was the Congolese who crossed into their territory. Sierra Leone has closed its border to trade with Guinea and Liberia and closed schools, cinemas, and nightclubs in the eastern Calahun district in a bid to halt the spread of the deadly Ebola virus. The Ministry of Health says at least 16 people have died from the latest outbreak, a figure that has doubled in the past week. In Somalia, there's a new outbreak of measles at the World Health Organization, and the UN Children's Agency warned is extremely alarming. UNICEF reports 1,350 suspected cases in both March and April, with another 1,000 in May. A leading activist group has called on the South African government to give greater priority to that country's tuberculosis epidemic. Here's VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The Treatment Action Campaign says TB is the leading cause of death in adults and children. Marcus Lowe is the group's head of policy.
South Africa has the highest TB infection rate on the planet.
The Treatment Action Campaign gained prominence in South Africa in the early years of the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
We want to see the same kind of widespread social mobilization that we had around HIV, around TB.
Some of the very first cases of drug-resistant tuberculosis were found in the eastern rural town of Tugela Ferry in KwaZulu-Natal province.
In South Africa, the rate of normal tuberculosis, drug-susceptible tuberculosis, seems to be stabilizing, but the really worrying thing is that the rate of drug-resistant tuberculosis is going up.
South Africa's National Strategic Plan for HIV, STIs, and TB does list tuberculosis as a priority, and the country's health minister is scheduled to address the TB conference on Friday. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In Abuja, members of the Bring Back Our Girls campaign met Wednesday on ways to pressure the Nigerian government to rescue more than 200 schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram militants from Borno State in April. Bana Lawan, a local government official from Chibok, where the girls were abducted, said he's seen no security upgrade.
To me, I didn't see any actions to rescue these girls. There is no troop there in Chibok that purposely sent for this rescue.
The military has been criticized for not providing adequate security in northern states where a state of emergency has existed for more than a year. Meanwhile, the government in northern Adamawa State has closed viewing centers for watching the World Cup competition in Brazil. They're considered potential targets for a terrorist attack. Uganda's controversial foreign minister, Sam Kutesa, was elected president Wednesday of the UN General Assembly.
It's my firm commitment to be accessible, transparent, fair and balanced, and I count on your support and cooperation.
Speaking with reporters, he defended himself against allegations of corruption.
Given your government's position on gay rights and the allegations that have been swirling about corruption concerning you personally, do you think you are the right person for this job?
First of all, let me tell you this, that I have had a conspiracy by members of the opposition in our country, both inside and outside, who have tried their best to malign my name. I have never been found corrupt. I'm not homophobic, and I believe that I'm a sweet person to lead this organization for the next session.
Mr. Kutesa vowed as UNGA president he would promote gender equality and women's rights. A coalition of Algerian opposition parties has vowed to pursue its struggle for regime change, warning Wednesday the existing political impasse in the country could cause a state collapse. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, the 12th day of June, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There's been a deadly exchange of gunfire between the DRC and Rwandan forces.
It seems that a group of elements of the Rwandan Defense Force crossed our border and captured a corporal, brought him back to Rwanda, and killed him.
Lambert Mende is Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. Sierra Leone's minister of information says President Koroma is committed to fighting corruption. A movement has been launched to stop Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré from running for a third term. And a protocol on sexual violence in conflict has been launched.
I have met survivors of war zone rape around the world, and almost without exception, they ask for one thing: justice. The right to be accepted, not shunned by society.
Actress Angelina Jolie is the special envoy for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. Today is the World Day Against Child Labor, and a transit strike in Sao Paulo, Brazil, hangs over today's opening of the World Cup. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister has criticized neighboring Rwanda of deliberately undermining his government's efforts to improve security and stabilize the country. This follows border clashes between Rwandan forces and the Congolese National Army. But Rwandan Foreign Minister Louis Mushikiwabo said on the social media platform Twitter that the DRC government should stop its soldiers from repeatedly crossing into Rwandan villages. DRC Information Minister Lambert Mende tells reporter Peter Clotty his country has evidence that Rwanda is to blame for the clashes and the tensions between Kinshasa and Kigali.
According to clear evidence we have had, it seems that a group of elements of the Rwandan Defense Force crossed our border and captured a corporal, brought him back to Rwanda, and this brought his friend to fire to protect their position and protect our border. That is the first clash that occurred early in the morning. In the morning, probably around 10 or something like that, they took this corporal, took him out, and they killed him while his friends in the Congo side of the border were witnessing. This provoked the second clash. So if we are talking of provocation, it is really a deliberate provocation from Rwandan forces. And we are used with these games.
But the foreign minister is saying that you should stop your soldiers, the FARDC soldiers, from crossing into Rwandan villages. Will your government do that in order to ease tension between the two countries?
No soldier from Congolese army crossed the border. This is not true. I can confirm. No soldier from Congolese army crossed the border. But this morning, soldiers from Rwanda crossed our border and came in Congo. Whenever we are trying to solve durably this problem, normally now we are trying to disarm with FDLR. You must see such games played from the other side of the border just to jeopardize the exercise and stop the exercise, as if somebody there need peace. They need really these FDLR men in our country so that they have a pretext to be coming in whenever they want.
So what is your government going to do about this situation? Because it appears that there is accusation and counter-accusation coming from both sides. How would you resolve this impasse and ensure peace between the two nations?
We must sit with our colleagues of ICRGL. They tried to deploy this joint commission where Rwandans and the Congolese are part of, but they stopped it by firing. And this commission began to deploy. We hope that tomorrow the consensus will allow this commission to deploy and start a fact-finding mission. So this is the only way to find the truth.
Will your government be willing to meet with officials from Kigali to resolve this problem that is generating tension between the two countries?
My dear, we used to meet. We met for quite a long time. We are meeting and we will meet. But if there is no goodwill, we feel that nothing will come out.
Lamba Mende is Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. Sierra News Minister of Information says the prevention of corruption is very high on President Ernest Bai Koroma's agenda for prosperity. Alpha Kanu says President Koroma is also committed to protecting Sierra Leone's natural resources to make sure they are exploited judiciously to benefit all Sierra Leoneans. This comes after President Koroma this week sacked his chief of staff, Richard Conte, accusing him of lack of transparency in negotiating mining agreements and involvement in the illegal export of timber. Information Minister Kanu tells me that Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission and the Criminal Investigation Department are both interested in speaking with Mr. Conte.
As you know, President Koroma is a man who is very passionate about environmental protection and the conservation of the environment. So there was a time when he had placed a ban on the haphazard harvesting of timber and export. So that ban was on, but I believe that there were some people who had done some value addition to some local timber, and they had asked the president to allow them to export it as finished products since it had already been harvested. I believe that the president had given a limited concession to a group to do that and had asked the chief of staff to handle that. But I understand now that possibly the chief of staff may have exceeded his authority and that the limited quantity was made to be a kind of an infinite quantity.
Of course, we do not know exactly what companies are involved in this deal with Mr. Conte. Does the government have any idea who the companies are?
At the moment here, I don't know. I am not sure it is any of the regular mining companies, not the African Minerals and not the London Mining, because I was Minister of Mines who signed those mining agreements. I believe that this may be some of the new mining companies, or maybe even an exploration company that would have wanted to go into a mining mode, that would have made an application for which some kind of clearance would have been necessary. But being in the president's office as chief of staff, I think he probably may have exercised influence to try to inform the Minister of Mines to go ahead and sign, as he purportedly had the support and approval of the president. But I now know and understand that this is one of the reasons why he has been relieved that, in fact, the president did not authorize such situation.
The release, as you mentioned, is said that this agreement with Mr. Conte exposed the Sierra Leone government to potential loss of revenue. So is Mr. Conte likely to face prosecution?
Well, you know, the country is very strong on anti-corruption. The prevention and deterrent corruption is a very key issue in Sierra Leone and a matter that is very high on the agenda of President Koroma's agenda for prosperity. So I believe that the head of the Anti-Corruption Commission may have an interest. But I do understand that somehow he's been informed that the CID, i.e. the Criminal Investigation Department, is interested in speaking to him.
As you mentioned, the president is very passionate about protecting the natural resources. Does he feel disappointed?
He will be feeling very disappointed, I know, because he, as I said, is a man who has committed himself, one, to protecting the environment in Sierra Leone and also to exploiting the natural resources sensibly and judiciously so that the fallback will bring benefit to the people of Sierra Leone.
Alpha Kanu is Sierra Leone's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Boston, where he is doing a course in leadership at Harvard University. Burkina Faso musicians have launched a movement to stop President Blaise Compaoré from running for a third term. Under the Constitution, Compaoré is barred from running in the 2015 election, but a proposed referendum, if passed, could lift the term limits. Bambara Sergei Martin, known by his stage name Smokey, is co-founder of the Balai Citoyen Movement. He explains to Ricky Shryak why they want to stop President Compaoré from running for a third term.
Most of the young people, they don't trust any more politicians. For us, it's very important to be part of this game, you know, because in 2015, that's the last mandate of Blaise Compaoré, and he still wants to stay at the power, so we don't want it, and young people don't want it, so we decided to organize ourselves, and we started doing this, me and my brother and other musicians from Skalaja. And we use all the possibility of democracy rules to stop Blaise Compaoré and to let this country be guaranteed with good democracy rules.
When is the vote on changing the constitution, which will decide whether Blaise Compaoré can run for another term?
They say that they're planning to do it in November. There's an article in this constitution in Burkina Faso. It's saying that nobody can do more than 2 mandates. Blaise Compaoré is president since 27 years. It's too much. And they want to make one more mandate. If we fall out of this constitution, it's not possible anymore. So they're trying to change this article. For us, the law is the law. And the constitution is saying that 2 mandates, that's it. So Blaise out to leave now.
How are you guys going to stop them from changing the constitution?
Yeah, we're going to stop that with manifestation. We're going to stop that with... We're going to walk on the street. We're going to make sit-ins. We're going to use everything which is possible to stop it. And we're going to use also, in French, we're calling that disobeyance civile. Even if they get at the end to make the this referendum, we're going to trying to block the processes of the referendum. Because we have a lot of young people with us, so I think we are enough to build these processes.
What is the movement's next step to continue this protest?
A constitutional judge gets killed, you know. We were waiting for the results of autopsy. Of course, we're going to do something. You know, we're going to have a walk or something like that. There is a lot of problem of justice in our country, you know. A lot of years, you know. The biggest one before was Norbert Zongo. And now there is a constitutional judge get killed, and so it's in some kind of circumstances very, very, very troubled. So we have to do something for that. It's going to be very, very energetic, you know, this, because we're approaching the date. We're obliged to react, because if we let them do that, it's going to be some kind of cow, because if there's Compaoré sitting in the power in 2015, 10 years later, you know, it's going to be big trouble for everybody. If you don't do something, military people are going to do something. And that's what we don't want.
Bambara Sergey Martin, co-founder of the movement to stop President Blaise Compaoré from running for a third term. He was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Ouagadougou. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 12th. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. A conference in London, organized in part by actress Angelina Jolie, has launched a new international protocol on investigating sexual violence in war. Jolie is a special envoy for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. As Henry Richwell reports for VOA, the conference goal is to tackle the culture of impunity that now surrounds rape and sexual violence in conflict.
Layla Damon was 18 years old when her parents told her the details of her adoption at the height of the Balkans War. She was born on Christmas Day in Sarajevo in 1992, in the midst of the violent breakup of Yugoslavia. Her mother did not want to see her newborn child. Layla explains why.
My mother, who was Bosnian Muslim, was raped repeatedly in the concentration camps at the time, and she became pregnant and then in the end ended up having to give birth to me in the central hospital in Bosnia, in Sarajevo.
Layla grew up in Britain after being adopted by the husband and wife team who filmed her birth. The guns in Bosnia have long fallen silent, but the conflict has cast a long shadow.
Out of so many rapes that went on in Bosnia, I think there were only 12 that actually went to court. It's probably my birth mum's story, this kind of sense of injustice that nothing ever really got done to help her.
On Wednesday, organisers launched an international protocol on the documentation and investigation of sexual violence in conflict. Special Envoy for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Angelina Jolie, spoke at the launch.
I have met survivors of war zone rape around the world, and almost without exception, they ask for one thing: justice. The right to be accepted, not shunned by society, the right to long-term economic and health support, and above all, the right to see their attackers held accountable in a court of law.
Campaigners say the level of impunity in many African countries is particularly high, and the use of rape as a weapon of war in places like the Democratic Republic of Congo is endemic. Helen Kezienwaha is Uganda Country Director for the charity ISIS Women's International Cross-Cultural Exchange, which gives medical and emotional support for rape victims.
Most times when women are raped, their families, and especially their husbands, reject them. So they suffer from depression, loss of memory sometimes. Sometimes they see the perpetrators of the violence and nothing has happened.
Praise from the international community. But activists say the situation for women has not changed, particularly in ethnic minority areas where there is still conflict. Conference organisers hope the international protocol will shatter the culture of impunity for sexual violence in conflict. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Today, June 12, is the World Day Against Child Labour. To commemorate the day, the International Labour Organization reports that progress is being made in reducing the number of children forced to work. But the ILO says more needs to be done to eliminate the worst forms of child labour. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ILO headquarters in Geneva.
The International Labour Organization reports child labour has declined by one-third since 2000, down to 168 million in 2012. ILO child labour expert Furio Rosati says there is growing public awareness of the dangers and risks run by children forced to work. This is especially true for children involved in hazardous work, such as agriculture, mining, and domestic labor. He tells VOA more governments are implementing policies targeting child labor, and more efforts are being made to keep children in school and out of work. Rosati says this is being done by providing social protection, such as health insurance and unemployment insurance for poor families.
Social protection is a very important element, because one of the factors that pushes children into work is the vulnerability of the household, either the dire poverty or the exposure to negative shocks. So if someone in the household gets unemployed or is sick, cannot work anymore, then the children are, of course, exposed to the risk of becoming workers to support themselves and the households.
The ILO reports sub-Saharan Africa has the highest rate of child labor, with one out of five children forced to work. But the most child laborers are in the Asian and Pacific region. The agency says the greatest reduction in child labor is in Latin America and the Caribbean, where cash transfer programs for children and families are being implemented. It notes cash and in-kind child and family benefits, when combined with access to education and health services, are effective in combating child labor. Rosati says very few countries in Africa have social protection systems, but he says pilot programs involving cash transfers are going on in several countries, including Senegal, Burkina Faso, Zambia, Malawi, and Kenya. He says Ethiopia is operating a large public work program. He says South Africa's plan to cover the poor is having a good side effect on children. The ILO says momentum is building in the fight against child labor, but efforts need to be accelerated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Football fever is building as Brazil prepares to launch the 2014 World Cup today, Thursday, but celebrations in some areas are subdued compared to previous years. VOA's Cat Bob reports from Vila Isabel, a neighborhood near Rio de Janeiro's famed Maracanã Stadium.
The Brazilian economic capital appears to be going back to business, but everybody still has the strike in mind. The striking metro workers blocked the city for 3 days and worried the world. Downtown, store owners hope they can make up for lost business. With FIFA's World Cup starting Thursday, they think visiting tourists will be a bonanza for them. Maria Elisa Becci has a store near the República metro station.
I was really affected by the strike. I'm from Santana, and I use the subway a lot. Everybody was affected. My sales went down because nobody was able to come downtown because of the strike.
At the stadium where the opening game will take place between Brazil and Croatia, the rush is on. Officially, the Corinthians Arena is ready, but you can still see workers on the job. Temporary elevators or tarpaulins are everywhere. Around the stadium, landscapers prepare newly planted grass It's a last-minute effort. Delays like these have been a major issue, and the Brazilian Organizing Committee for the Cup has been heavily criticized the past few months. Rafael Acaldipani is an associate professor with the Getulio Vargas Foundation.
We have been having World Cups in different countries over the last, let's say, 50 years, and no one until now was challenging FIFA as Brazilians are challenging FIFA. So this, I think, is a very strong message to the world. Brazilians are saying, you know what, we don't accept this type of governance in football in the world. We have to change FIFA. We have to become, to make football to become popular again.
The criticism of the committee is not a big concern for fans from around the world who are eager to see the games. They pose for souvenir photos in front of the stadium. Whether children or adults, they only dream about the cup. Maria and Mario came from Chile.
I'm really happy. This country is wonderful. People are welcoming and adorable.
So the party is on. Fans are only waiting for the referee to blow the whistle to kick off the 2014 World Cup. For reporter Nicolas Pinot, I'm Park Brewer, VOA News.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup. Hosts Brazil tackle Croatia in Group A action at the Arena Corinthians in Sao Paulo today, Thursday. Cameroon's Indomitable Lions, who are also in Group A, will be Africa's first team in action. My colleague James Batty spoke to Albert Njiembonde, a sports reporter with Cameroon Radio and Television, who gave an overview of the Indomitable Lions team.
The team, it's a constellation of experience and young lads. I must say 15 out of the 23 have played at the World Cup at least once. And I think what has gone well with public opinion in Cameroon is that at least two local players have been selected, which is something like an improvement from what happened in 2010 when we took an all-professional squad to South Africa that failed to deliver and to perform. So a lot of people think that instead of taking all professionals who don't give the result, why not begin to introduce some local breeds? Just like we had in 1990, it was a sport that was constituted mainly by players from the local championship and who gave us the kind of results we have. And I think that two players taken from Cotton Sport of Garoua, that's a team that emerged third in the African Champions League last season, it's gone on well with public opinion, yeah, especially after the friendlies. The right back, Cedric Djegwe, performed really well, played without any complex, especially against the German national side in Mönchengladbach. And I think public opinion holds that more and more there should be local players in the selection. And that we have a player like Samuel Eto'o who still has a last chance to perform, especially at the World Cup. A lot of comparison is being made between him and Roger Miller, who delivered a fine performance at 1990. Everybody holds that, okay, Eto'o has delivered for Cameroon, but a lot of his performances were registered at club. Now it's time for him to deliver for country. It may just be his last World Cup. And I think that's where the public is annoyed that the player should better concentrate on performing, and then money matters and other concerns could be raised after the World Cup.
That was Albert Njiembonde, a sports reporter with Cameroon Radio and Television, speaking in Yaoundé, Cameroon. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Officials from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda are blaming each other for a cross-border clash Wednesday that left five Congolese soldiers dead. The DRC accuses Rwandan forces of crossing into North Kivu province, kidnapping and killing a Congolese soldier. Officials in northeastern Nigeria are disputing reports that Boko Haram militants kidnapped 20 women from a village near Chibok. And that's it for this Thursday, June 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, saying, have a good day, Africa. Put your flags up in
the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit voafootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil, The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at voafootball.com.